CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. Live on a Thursday, it is CliffCentral.com. And we have the marvelous Pumi Mashiho with us this morning. Hello, Pums.
Good morning.
Yes. Pumi was snacking on a hot crust bun. It's that time of year, believe it or not. Hot crust bun time.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I do like a hot crust bun, I won't lie. You know what the nicest thing is? You toast them. Now, even an idiot like me can do this. You cut them in half, you toast them, and then you put really lovely fresh butter on them, and you just let it melt. Nom, 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 nom.
That is totally my morning this morning. Also, you know, George Foreman grill.
Yes.
Don't get me started.
That is a...
You can fly to the moon on a George Foreman grill.
That is a terrific piece of equipment. Who knew that that guy wouldn't be as famous for his boxing as he would be for his grill? Huh?
Right.
Dude.
That's a marvelous
thing.
What
happened to him, actually?
He made the George Foreman grill. That's all that matters, Sia. That's what we're saying.
No, has he...
Sia, what else do you...
He's still alive.
Who cares?
Still alive.
Who cares? His grill continues. That is all we're interested in.
His grill will go on.
His grill will go on. Correct. You want,
no, I have not thought about him in so long.
I should wish. I should hope and pray in my lifetime I might create something as marvelous as the George Foreman grill. Then I would die a happy man. Oof. And how much money? How much do you think he made out of that?
Still making tons and tons and tons of, because we're still buying it.
You know,
I can't imagine my George Foreman going out of commission. I would actually.
No, you'd have to. It's almost the kind of piece of it's almost the kind of kitchen equipment that you would need a backup of. You know.
Sure.
Just in case.
Yeah, you'd need to keep one extra one in the cupboard, because if you went more than a couple of days without it, you'd be screwed. I use it for everything.
And now that we're out of lockdown, it's slightly better. But in the lockdowns, guys, that thing kept delivering and delivering and delivering. Just, you know, toasted sammies,
well,
grilled chicken.
Listen, this stuff, you know, it's funny. Like, one of the great golfers, I can't remember which one it is now, and someone's going to remind me, and then I'm going to feel like an idiot for not remembering myself. One of the great golfers... He like invented a drink or something.
And Arnold Palmer.
It was the Arnold Palmer. And he made more money. Apparently he made more money out of that than he did out of his entire golfing career. You know, you don't have to be brilliant, hey? You really don't. And this is some inspiration for you this Thursday morning. All you need is the one thing, the one little idea that hits.
And it's just got to fill a hole in the human spirit. That alone will make you wealthy beyond your wildest dreams. Just fill some human spirit, you know. Just
listen,
like the need for a grilled sandwich quickly.
Yeah, right. Well, yes. don't tempt me, because
a thirst quenching drink.
I will take all day and all year and all of my life to come up with that one idea. And if I don't get there pretty soon, I won't be too old to enjoy my money. I need this to happen.
Is anyone close to that? Because I certainly am not.
No.
Have you seen on? I think it's on Netflix. The Founder, the McDonald.
No.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
Tell me.
You have to watch it. It is astounding. So it's the story of how McDonald's became McDonald's, and how he stumbled onto this thing, and how you know McDonald's is a property company.
Sure.
And how he got to that point where he was the property owner and constituting the company around property instead of the burgers and the franchise.
Unbelievable.
Mm.
It is.
Since they make more money off the property that the restaurant is built on rather than selling burgers. And it's also just unnerving to find out that it's not all like a Happy Meal story, how it all began. There's some cookery, there's some thievery, sure, there's some how do we cut the budgets and make everything super cheap.
Mm-hmm. The and fact super that fast.
The fact that there's no milk in the milkshake, but alas. Okay.
There's milk in the milkshake. There's milk in the milkshake.
Really? Comes from a sachet.
So Nesquik also comes in a like powdery thing, and it's great.
Yeah, I don't want to know too much
We're
about
still
that.
Loving it.
You see, I do want to know about the story McDonald's, but the moment I
you
find
have to
out,
watch the movie.
Yeah, but the moment I find out what's actually in those patties, it'll be the last time I ever go there. So
they never tell you that.
But you can guess.
There is an extremely fascinating, and this is not going to ruin anything for you,
yeah,
but an extremely fascinating scene as they're working out the
Hang on, they're working out the what? Sorry, Pums, I lost you for a second there. There's this.
I just, yeah, it just went crazy here on my side. The screen's gone blank and it's just saying starting event. But
yeah,
anyway,
mine too.
There's this crazy concert of them working out the most efficient way of making the burger as quickly as possible. And they, like, in an open parking lot, kind of to figure out where the fryer must be, where the burger station must be, who's putting the bun and the patty and this. It's amazing. It's amazing.
Jeez, that sounds so good. I'm going to watch it now. You see,
you have
you've
to.
Given me... Now, there's more homework. So... Listen, Sia and I did something really interesting yesterday. I went round to Constitution Hill, which I did long ago when I was a law student, and we went to visit the Constitutional Court because it was the highest court in the land and it had just been built. And, you know, it was a really exciting thing. I mean, I think Chaskelson was like still the Chief Justice, and there were people like Yvonne Mokgoro and Justice Krichler and those sort of people on the bench. But I think they were in session on the day that we went there, so we couldn't even go into the chamber. So I got to see very little. And yesterday, Sia and Rina and I went to the Constitutional Hill precinct, the whole thing. And we got to see the fort. I mean, I've been to the women's prison as well. There was an event or two that we've done there. But mm-hmm. I've seen it piecemeal. This time I got to see the Flame of Democracy, the Constitutional Court, the old fort, the Mandela cell that they kept him in over there. And they're doing some incredible, incredible things there. There was a period for a couple of years in the last while where they actually did nothing because everything was put on hold. And, you know, people had... other priorities, but they've got a trust there that's looking after Constitution Hill, and it's really incredible. I can only suggest to people that at some point this year, in 2021, you need to get on over there, because the Constitution is probably, you know, we're always looking for things in South Africa that make us a nation. And I'm not a big patriot, and I'm not into nationalism, because we've seen how much nationalism can do damage, right? But I think we have to have some common set of values. And if any single thing binds us together as a people, it has to be that constitution. Not for any other reason but that it was a negotiated way out of our very ugly and divided past into our collective future. And the people who put it together tried to create something that would last for hundreds of years, something which would give young, old, black, white, rich, poor, people from every ethnic and language group, abled and disabled, just everybody a chance to make this country theirs, and for the law to treat us all equally, and all of those things that, you know, they're not even in the Constitution, they're in the preamble, which is pretty much carved in stone. And there's this magnificent tablet right in front of the Flame of Democracy that you need to go and see if you go to Constitution Hill. And the tablet has the entire preamble carved into it. And, you know, there I was standing there thinking, this is about the closest we could get in South Africa to our Forum Romanum. You know, the Roman Forum that everything in ancient Rome happened in that forum. You know, Caesar was cremated there, the leaders would meet, speeches would be made. It was the center of the Roman universe. And when I saw that tablet there, I thought, you know, if in 1,000 or 10,000 or 100,000 years, when no one will remember that Pumi or Sia or Gareth were ever there, they might dig up that tablet and they'll know what kind of a nation we were. And that would be good enough for me. I'd be proud of that. And it kind of hit me hard. It was a beautiful thing to do, and I just loved I loved every second of being there. We saw some amazing things. Sia will tell you what he thought the highlights were. But I loved it, and I cannot recommend the place enough. I feel like an idiot for only having been able to see it properly for the first time in my life now at this advanced age.
And you know, you can go and sit in on cases as well. If you look on their website, you'll see what's on the roll, and you can just go and sit in. A couple of years ago, Kanekho and I went to the Constitutional Hill. Yeah. Listen, if nothing else, man, my child will have lots of stories to tell when he's a grown-up about the crazy things his mom used to make him do.
Yes. No, but these are good things, man.
And, absolutely.
And we were walking around just before going in, and you know who they were? They were hearing the case with Makate, with the Vodacom case.
Oh, right. With the
Please Call Me Guy.
Intellectual property was the purpose of that one, yeah.
And before we walked in, Judge Chickelson was out there. We actually bumped into him, and we had a whole conversation with him. Later, when we went home, Kanekho was like, "So, what happened to that guy's arm? What happened to his arm and his
eye?" Don't you mean Albie Sachs?
Albert Sachs.
Yes.
Albie Sachs.
Yeah.
And I'm explaining to Kanekho about letter bombs and assassins, and he said to me,
"Where'd you even begin?"
Shoo, mommy, you know that assassin couldn't have been very good. Like, who sends a bomb in a letter?
But I mean, what a...
That's his takeaway.
It's a good observation, you know. It's interesting. Like, your son will never forget that story, first having met the man, and second of all, having his own take on it. Because, you know, there are a lot of kids learning about Batman and Spider-Man and Superman, and there's nothing wrong with that. But... that story won't. If you ask him about Albie Sachs today, he'll probably know about it. And this is the point, right? Is we should really spend a lot more of our time taking our kids, like you do, Pumi. This is an exemplary thing that you did, to go and see stuff like this. This is the stuff that actually matters.
That's important. That's part of history. That's right around us. It's open. It's free. I had been to Concord before. I'd been to the women's prison before. I'd done, I think, one tour around the prison itself. But I hadn't known so much of these stories that are just so woven into this place. Even just the story of the old fort there.
Yeah.
And we went through like bunkers. It was really an unprecedented tour that we got to go through, like these bunkers and these like alleyways, and to see how there was like a lookout where, you know, there were guns just pointed out to protect. It's like, what? This happened.
in living memory, not long ago.
Incredible, absolutely incredible that we still have this history that's so alive and rich around us.
And how's that courtyard with the guns, with the holes where the prisoners used to come and be, and in those holes would be like guns pointed at them as there's like rows of them. Just like, whoa, guys.
Well, I didn't realize how beautiful the view was from up there. I mean, it's called Constitution Hill because it's actually built on the highest point in Johannesburg. You can see a huge amount of Joburg from there. You've got this incredible view into Hillbrow, which, you know, it's like Hillbrow has got its own throbbing heartbeat. It's just an incredible place. Not the sort of place you should go into ill-advised, but it's definitely alive in ways that many other parts of our country are not. And then you've got the view of what would have been the gold mines, which is the reason the fort was built by Paul Kruger. And then, of course, it was used by successive. First, it was captured by the Boers. Then it was captured by the English. Then it was recaptured by the Boers. Then it was captured later on for a different purpose. I say captured in inverted commas and used for political prisoners and all the stuff that happened during the Nationalist Party regime. And then eventually, you know, it's become kind of this museum. And when you walk around there, we don't have a lot of history in Johannesburg because it's only 100 years old. You know, Joburg's just over 100 years old. So it's not the oldest city in the world, but there's enough if you're prepared to look for it. It's quite cool.
A lot's gone on here.
It's really cool. Yeah. It is cool. Anyway, Tracy says, my kids love museums, antique shops, and history. The antique shops in small Karoo towns are nice. Even better than museums. There's so much history there. That's a good point. But she does caution us. She says, you must be careful. The state of Robben Island is really poor at the moment. It's a sad, sad place. Derelict, unkempt, and falling apart. I remember feeling that way about the Robert Sobukwe house. And we're about to do an episode on him for Blind History, which is coming up. Yeah, and the story of Robert Sobukwe is probably in some ways more moving than many of the ones that we are told constantly by the ANC. Of course, Robert Sobukwe was not ANC, he was PAC. And therefore, his story is often brushed under the carpet by the ANC because it's inconvenient that he was the hero that he was to them. And
last weekend was another anniversary of his passing.
That's correct.
Like a ship in the night.
And it's funny, you know, when I think of Robben Island, and I was lucky enough to spend a night there. I did a show from there one morning, and we spent the night before there. And this was when I was still at 702. And we slept in the governor's house, and you could see Cape Town from the kind of situation, the site, the vantage point that the prisoners might have seen it for all those years. And the eerie silence of that place is just something else. But the single place on that island that moved me the most was Robert Sobukwe's little house. And I remember it was also in a state of disrepair. But that place is just, of all the places in there, and I saw Madiba's cell, and I saw the quarry, and I saw where they used to do their exercise in the yard, and they had a landing strip on Robben Island too, which is still there. And there's a lot about the island that's interesting. But that Robert Sobukwe house was the one place that really moved me. And I do wish that we had people running the Department of Arts and Culture or whichever department it falls under. I suppose it's Public Works or whatever. But that really felt that instead of wasting the money on enriching themselves or doing things that will score them cheap political points now, that they would put that money in the right places, that, you know, they would help and train and look after and nurture young people's interest in history. Because, you know, I'm biased, obviously, and I'm a massive, massive fan of history. So when I see this stuff not being looked after, it drives me crazy. The thing that's probably got me into more trouble than anything else when I go off on one of my rants on the show is when people destroy history or they abandon an artifact or something is stolen or something is burnt down. Or to me, that's just the worst. And when I read stories like that in history, it just drives me crazy because I think what an irresponsible bunch of people were in that country at that time to let all of that go to waste. Terrible, terrible, terrible stuff. So I hope they sort it out. And that upsets me, Tracy, that you just spoilt my morning by telling me they're not looking after Robben Island. Tabiso says...
And you can never recover it. You can never get it back.
Yeah. By the way, what did you like about Conhill? What was your favorite thing?
It is... Yeah, it's just what it means and it represents to all of us still to this day. The first time I went there was because my mother actually took me here, a bit of a kanejo. It's a spooky situation.
Wow.
But my mother took me there, and she particularly took me to the women's prison. And to see it first through her eyes, and then I was like, well, this is pretty much a big deal.
Mm.
And I've subsequently been there. You know, my family is predominantly with so many women.
Yeah.
And we go then, there's a bit of a courtyard first before you actually walk into the women's prison. And there are all of these women's names out on this massive piece of marble. And you, yeah, that is my first and cherished memory of that place. To go, it is because of people like, you know, my mother's predecessors or my sister's predecessors and so many other men who also did so much that we're here today, that we're standing. So yeah, it's everything collectively for me, and the reminder of it. It's crazy. It's not lost on me. It's
no, we really have to, we have to preserve these places. And I think that what they're doing up at Conhill is just so important. So if you get a chance, please go and see it. It'll be one of the best things you can do. And if you've got kids, do what Pumi and Sia's mom did and take them up there, because they'll love it. You know, even if they just go to see the fort and the prison cells and all of that stuff, because it is really exciting. I mean, it's like being, it's our own kind of Disney world, except it has substance to it. Well, because it's
also buzzing, and there are things happening there, and kudos.
Well, I don't mean to be disrespectful, but why I say Disney World is it's like this fort, and there are slits that the guns would have pointed out at, and, you know, they can climb up these old stone stairs, and the fort has got these big, thick walls, and, you know, if a kid has imagination, this is the kind of stuff that activates that. That's what I mean by Disney World. I don't mean anything disrespectful.
But mentioning the unfortunate state of Robben Island, given the message we received this morning, it was also refreshing. And the reason why we were there is because of so much that is currently underway at Conhill. And that's because of a great group of people who have banded together to really ensure that you know, the standard of what Conhill is stands and is remains. So it was great to see people invested and working on different ideas and creative things. And I marveled at how they go about it as well. So, for example, there's some things that are done inside some old cells or some, you know, just some of the rooms and spaces there. But how they're able to, you know, work in those places, but there are certain rules, like you cannot drill into a wall, you can't knock down any walls.
Right.
So they're really respectful in how they go about that, so that we still have the structures as they were. It's a lot of work, but it's fascinating.
No, it's incredible.
And isn't it, but also isn't it inspiring to be around people who just love what it is that they do, who love what it is that they do, who care about it and want it to be the best. Outside of all of the shit that we hear, you know, outside of all of the money that is stolen, the politicians that suck.
Right.
Here is a group of people dedicated to what they do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dedicated to what they do and the job they have at hand, without like all the fanfare and the fuss and needing to be known and acknowledged and drive Porsches and Lamborghinis, and you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's so true. That's exactly right. Mm. Because that stuff is just so unimportant. When you see these people who are doing this stuff because they love it and they care about it, it just changes everything. So absolutely 100% right. All right, so a few things that we need to do this morning. First things first, Pumi says she's dressed up. We're on YouTube this morning. She put on her pink lipstick for us for YouTube. And you can watch us live. You don't just have to listen. I mean, I caution
and
you.
The colored dress.
Very nice. I caution you against watching me. And you know, Sia usually looks smart, but If you want to punish yourself and actually see me instead of just hearing the show, then you're welcome to do so, but at your own risk. Okay, that's all I'm going to say. If you've been paying attention to us for all these years and you still think it would be a good idea to watch me rather than to just hear me, be that at your own risk. That's all I'm going to say. But you can join us anytime you like.
Yes, I am officially now a YouTuber.
Yes, that's right.
I must remember to tell this to my child. I must remember to tell my child this. He is going to be jealous.
Someone said this to me in a meeting at the office the other day, and I was like, uh-oh. Don't know if I like it. There it is.
Are we content creators now?
We are YouTube content creators, yeah, whether we like it or not.
I'm going to change my bio on social media, and I'm going to start every show with, hey, guys.
Hey, guys. Hey, guys.
Watch our channel. Subscribe to our channel. But I would like you to subscribe because that's how we measure whether or not it's working and whether or not it's successful. And, you know, if it's not worth doing, then we'll just go back to doing the podcasts because the numbers there are really significant. And I don't want to do a boring show. I don't want to do something for like a couple of thousand people. If it's a couple of tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of people, sure. I know,
but don't worry. Tune in tomorrow. We'll be doing a beauty makeup tutorial.
Is that what we're doing? Oh, okay.
Yes.
I've just remembered I've got things tomorrow. I won't be here then for that.
Why wasn't I invited for the makeup tutorial?
Like, yes, we'll do that tomorrow. And then on Friday, we'll do an unboxing and review of a new device.
Have you ever watched those things, the unboxings?
Oh. You could get lost in them, yo.
No,
you could
get lost in them. Yeah, I have to say that if there's something that I really want, you get a bit of a kick out of someone else opening that up. I know it sounds ridiculous, and if you've never done it before, you probably think we're insane. But am I right, Pumi? Like, there's something about
it. It's like a screensaver. It's like, you know how you can get, like, sucked into a screensaver?
Yes.
The unboxing videos, they can be so soothing and so satisfying all at the same time.
Big time.
Mindless, like, watching of the packaging and the, come on, see.
That's so great.
Thankfully, I've never fallen into that trap. No,
that's never been
my YouTube thing.
Well, one of the other things that we'll do this morning is we will check in with Sean Sanders. There's a lot to discuss. I noticed that Bitcoin is back up to hovering around $50,000. I always mention the price because, you know, that drives interest. And I think a lot of people are only interested if they know that there's money to be made. And let me tell you something. If you bought when it was down at $42,000 or $43,000 earlier this week, you are happy you did. And for those people who who bought like when it was $50,000, you're not quite as thrilled. But we'll get an update with Sean Sanders later on and Revix. That's all coming right up. All right. Quick email before we get to the headlines this morning. This is from Liesl. She says, hey, Gareth and gang, just wanted to say well done on an awesome show. Been listening to you since last year and watched the YouTube stream for the first time this morning. Oh gosh, what a treat. Those Word, Excel, and sneezing shenanigans had me in stitches all day. Keep doing whatever you're doing. And to Sia, I don't have children, but man, you seem like a fun child to have. You see, Sia, people still think you're a child. What a bonus for you.
I think it's a great thing for people to think that.
Yes. But you seem like a fun child to have, even though you shat your pants. We had to bring that in.
Oh.
With that said, how about doing a kiss and tell show every now and then where your audience can ask questions about anything they want, life experiences, dark secrets, pet peeves, embarrassing moments, dates that went wrong, worst jobs. Let me tell you something, Liesl. That's pretty much the whole show every day.
Yes.
I don't know how to put this to you. If you've only been listening for the year, maybe we've been operating at less than our usual frequency. But Pumi will vouch for me on this, having been part of our lives for Pum's, 20 years I've known you. That's what the show is. All we do is talk about embarrassing stuff. That's pretty much the whole show. So if you want more, I'll try and get more going. That's all I can promise.
I don't know where we'll get that more, Gareth. Liesl, you know that I just did a what in my buns once before. I can never run for political office ever.
None of us can.
Even if I wanted to because of that confession. So I don't know what more you want from us, Liesl.
Yeah, none of us can ever run. And thank God, what a privilege it is that we won't have to run for political office. None of us want to.
You never know how power hungry we might get.
No, I can pretty much guarantee Pumi, Sia, Gareth, we're not running for political office.
No. I might run strategy.
Yes, sure. No, we could be the like the power behind the throne type people one day, especially when we're old and bored. But I don't see with all the things we with all the things we've said, Pumi, about politicians, I don't think they'd want us around them. They would think of us as the enemy.
No.
You don't think so?
But No. I think that what they actually need is they need to be given a run for their money. They need to be given a run for their money, kept on their bloody toes.
Well, it's not good.
And we can do that. We can do that.
But we've got to do it from here. It's better to do it from here. I mean, I don't want to be part of their world. You know, to quote Aladdin, part of your world. It's not my. That's not where I want to be. Okay, I'm not Aladdin. That's the Little Mermaid. All right, so many things to talk about. Tabiso says, "Pardon my language. I'm a musicologist, and stuff like that just upset me." So he means, you know, the opera house or theatre that your effing government has now turned into a parking lot in Pretoria, under the Department of Education. They're on the corner of Bosman and Pretoria. It's basically in Church Square. Instead of restoring it, I bet some fat-bellied F now has groceries or a Walkman. Yeah, Tabby, so look, if you're a musicologist and you're into music and you see great buildings that were built for their acoustics and for performances and for artistic expression, and listen, the apartheid government didn't do a lot of that, so there are only a few because they were not artistic, and most of their architecture was so revolting that I'd be happy to see any of it go. But I agree with you, there are these facilities. You know, we have great buildings in this country that are, in structural terms, amazing and could be used by creative and talented young South Africans to develop their skills, and instead they're just left to rack and ruin and, as you say, parking lots, which is very disappointing. You know, we have the stuff. It's not as if this wasn't there. We had it and then we let it go to ruin. And I do blame, again, the politicians, the people we don't want to be. Anyway, all right, let's get to some headlines. Are you ready for that, Pumi? Let's see what we've got here. Home Affairs. Home Affairs have had to explain themselves. Aaron Motsoaledi said that the department would defend its decision to block Atul Gupta's attempt to have a South African passport issued. Speaking at a media briefing in Pretoria on Wednesday, Motsoaledi said that the department remained firm in its decision to deny the issuing of the Gupta brothers' new South African passport. I don't see why we shouldn't give them a passport, if only because it means they'd come here and then we could arrest them. Or is that a stupid idea?
I don't think it's because they want to come here. I think it's because they want to use it to gallivant around the world, and they can't get it from their home country.
I see. Okay. Well, Motsoaledi said that even though last month it emerged the Guptas had approached the High Court in Pretoria to compel the department to issue them with a passport, the controversial family fled South Africa to Dubai as criminal allegations mounted against them. It is amazing to me when I close my eyes and go to sleep at night, it just beggars belief that you could steal billions, not just thousands or hundreds and hundreds of thousands or millions like you and I might if we robbed a bank, but billions. And then all you have to do is go to Dubai and spend some of those billions to buy yourself a nice luxurious lifestyle. And no one can touch you. It's incredible, right?
You don't need to be stealing billions. Speaking of Home Affairs, they're still investigating how Bushiri left the country. And he's just millions. And he's still broadcasting.
And
he's a YouTuber. Every Wednesday, he's still broadcasting on YouTube.
And
asking people to keep paying their tithes into his Nedbank account.
And I'll say again, where is Marcus Uster? You know, it seems like if you steal enough, you get past the authorities. But if you steal a little bit, you go to jail. Like ordinary people
as
go to
Hamilton
jail.
Hamilton Dove.
No. Hamilton Dove.
Hamilton Dove.
So that's going on. They're not going to get their passports, according to Motsoaledi. And then speaking of ministers, Ayanda Dlodlo said she was yet to see any concrete evidence of intelligence agents trying to bribe judges. She told Parliament that information to this effect was given to the state security agency by a discredited information peddler. Dlotlo was answering questions at Parliament on Wednesday about allegations aired at the state capture inquiry that members of the judiciary had received payments in operation codenamed Project Justice. The minister said there was no evidence and that the operation was probably not carried out. What do you think of that?
So what's not in that report, which is even more galling, if you ask me, is the fact that she also stood up and said the DG went and appeared at the commission without first conferring with her, without her kind of approving it. I was just like, yo, you don't have to approve it.
No. It's
like, how power hungry? What was she going to say? Oh, don't go there.
How do these guys figure this? I mean, you know,
she was so angry. One of the things she was very angry about is that he went without having first conferred with her. And she stood up in Parliament to say this. And not a single person was just like, hey, slow your roll, sister. Slow your roll.
Rwanda is the first African nation to get the Pfizer biotech vaccine. Apparently, they have got 103,000 doses of the vaccine in the capital, Kigali, through the UN-led COVAX initiative, which aims to provide equitable access to COVID-19 jabs for poorer countries. Again, Rwanda, whether you love or hate them, and we had JJ Cornish on the other day to say how not necessarily kosher Paul Kagame is, but certainly he gets things done. You know, at least they are starting to get their COVID vaccines, which is more than I can say for many other countries on this continent. I do have to just drop this in. Yesterday, Bladen Zimande and Zweli Mkhize had something really interesting to say, and I don't think a lot of people have been paying attention to this because it didn't get massive news coverage. It certainly didn't go onto social media, and I wonder why. So it turns out if you've had this new variation, the new COVID variation, the second wave, as it was called, you're pretty much immune. They've done the tests, and this is excellent news. So what I would say is, yeah, based on, and this was a joint statement by the Minister of Higher Education and the Minister of Health, that says, listen, if you've had the second strain of coronavirus, the South African variant, as they call it, you can pretty much go back to living your normal life because you can't pass it on and you're pretty much immune to all the strains. If that's the case, you don't need any of this stuff. I mean, they didn't say this, but they should because it's true. And I'd like a doctor to explain to me why it isn't true if they know better than me. But from their own statements, these are two ministers in our government, they said this pretty much immunizes you and means you can take off the mask. You don't have to worry about it. If this is true, though, but Pumi, we could if we've had this because you can't infect other people.
The mask is proving to have a whole lot of other benefits. Like, don't take off the mask, y'all.
Hey,
just keep your mask on.
But you know,
I
hear you.
I'm a fan of the mask.
I know.
I'm a fan of the mask, y'all.
And I'm
like,
also.
I've not had a flu.
I know.
Neither has my child.
I know, but Pumi, listen. I hear you, and it also helps not having people breathing right on you and social distance, all that stuff. But those are things that you can. Those have got to be optional. Those are not things that you can compel and mandate people to do. And frankly, if I can't take off my mask, I don't see any reason to get the vaccine. I don't see any reason, unless I can go back to some semblance of normality where I don't have to walk around with this thing on my face the whole time. Unless that happens, I'm not participating in anything else. Either the vaccine allows me to reclaim my life in every which way, including international travel, or why bother with the vaccine?
Let's see. Texas has just gone maskless.
That's right.
And let's see how that works for them. They'll be our little test study.
Litmus test.
Mm.
Here's an interesting story and something we can pick up with Jean-Jacques the next time he's on. President Emmanuel Macron has admitted for the first time that French soldiers murdered a top Algerian independence figure and then covered up his death in the latest acknowledgement by Paris of its colonial era crimes. Macron met with four of the grandchildren of Ali Boumendjel and admitted in the name of France that the lawyer had been detained, tortured, and killed in Algiers in 1957. It's a long time ago, hey? I mean, those children and grandchildren, they must, you know, from 1957, this guy was killed. That's a fair amount of time that's elapsed that the French had to tell the truth, and they've waited all these years. French authorities had previously claimed that he had committed suicide. Doesn't that sound familiar, Steve Biko? While in detention, a lie that his widow campaigned to be overturned up to her death in August last year. I mean, how unfortunate that she had to die just before this admission.
And fighting this for
Can
years.
Can you imagine? Ugh, anyway. So the French have finally come through with the truth on that, and about time. Also, bowing to pressure, Angela Merkel has eased her virus curbs. See, people are just getting sick and tired of all these rules now, and they will start rebelling. I've said this for the longest time, and it's happening. After more than 9 hours of talks, Merkel and Germany's 16 regional leaders unveiled a step-by-step plan to relax restrictions after months of shutdowns, despite concern over the spread of new and more aggressive variants. She said that they're going to get Europe's top economy back up and running, caving to political pressure and public discontent 7 months before a general election. Oh, there it is. That's why they're doing some general election. You see, politicians behave very differently when there's an election on the way.
Of course, that's why we're on level one. What? So people can campaign for Correct. Later on this year.
Correct. Ah. There we go. Quite, quite right. All right.
6 months of campaigning coming your way.
Yeah.
Whether we like it or not.
100%. Okay, so a couple of messages quickly. Carl says, we all need to install that CRISP with a K app that Rich Mulholland was talking about yesterday because it cuts out background noise. And Carl says he can hear someone making breakfast. It must be Canejo, right?
Carl, I'm sorry. It's my child. Children, this is the thing about children. They have to eat three times a day. It's quite irritating, actually.
You're lucky if it's three times a day.
Yeah, because they're at school. That's why it's only three times. When they were like locked down, it was every 2 hours. But I'm sorry, Carl. I tried to mute, and it just he my trigger finger wasn't as quick.
Well, I made notes while Rich was talking to us yesterday, and I'm going to try out some of that stuff today. I had to leave straight after the show yesterday to do our Con Hill visit, but I'll be checking out CRISPR today.
Tips and tricks there.
Yeah, CRISP, not CRISPR. CRISPR is the gene editing software. That's not going to, unless you've got a laboratory with live specimens in it, I don't know how that's going to help you. But CRISP with a K.
Ooh, so, gene editing.
Dogozo says, I understand why the mask is necessary right now, but I'm not a fan. I cannot wait until the day we do not have to walk around wearing masks. I'm with you, Dogozo. Okay, it's time, and I think a lot of us look forward to this every week, where we get to check in with Sean Saunders, and yet another week where there is plenty to talk about. Has it ever happened that we just go, oh, Sean, just give us a normal old update. There's nothing really happening. There's nothing really to talk about. Not a single time, never. Revix, R-E-V-I-X, is a fantastic place to where you can allow yourself and experiment with a diversified portfolio of the world's top cryptocurrencies. It automatically stays up to date with the ever-changing market and rebalances itself regularly. You can sign up for free to Revix. Just follow them on social media at R-E-V-I-X Invest, at Revix Invest. You can also verify your ID, add funds, select the bundle of your choice, and play the game. So, Sean, what's happening, man?
Good morning, Gareth and team. Yeah, it's been another weird, crazy, fun week in the world of crypto. I'm pinching myself every morning just with sort of the growth that we're going through. I mean, it's been just quite remarkable to sort of see the mainstream adoption of crypto happen this quickly. And I suppose, you know, you're seeing all the mainstream media, you know, outlets coming around to this now and going, oh, hell, we have to actually report about this.
Yeah.
And that's also led to a bigger surge in, you know, sort of marketing in the space.
Well, I've noticed that there are even some media houses that are now reporting the price of Bitcoin and Ethereum, just like they do the gold price, as a regular thing. And that was something unheard of when we started doing it. You know, we used to give the Bitcoin price every morning, and I still do it regularly, especially if I know you're going to be on. But there are still places that are pretending that it doesn't exist. Now, can you explain a couple of things to me? I've got my own agenda for this morning. There are so many of these altcoins, right? There are so many of these new coins that come out. Are people just creating them and they are empty vessels, or are many of them being designed for a specific purpose and people are buying into them because of what their applications might be? I don't understand that. Can you maybe explain that to idiots like me in the simplest language?
Sure. So, I mean, altcoins are created on a daily basis. There's actually at the moment about 8,200 cryptocurrencies. So you have to sort of think about the altcoins very much like startups, right? At some point in time, Google, Facebook, et cetera, these were all startup companies. Just like, you know, once upon a time, Bitcoin was worth one US cent. Ethereum was a cryptocurrency worth absolutely nothing. Correct. So I guess a lot of people are actually speculating and, you know, looking at white papers, which is sort of like the research brief about what exactly these cryptocurrencies are looking to do. And they're trying to get the next big win. And it is very much like a gambling-esque approach. I mean, a lot of people would actually look at venture capital, which is the whole entire industry of investing in startups, and say that that's a bit of a gambling industry, right? I mean, so sort of where along the spectrum are you really sitting? Because when you're investing in stocks, you're also just making a calculated bet. It's just, you know, it's a slightly different sort of approach to maybe investing in high-risk startups.
Well, they are startups, but they're also a great place for you to make a lot of money very quickly, because, I mean, that's where you get the 100,000 times increases overnight. And, I mean, people have made huge fortunes just on the altcoins market, but you have to really know what you're doing, because you can also lose money.
Most certainly. So if you look at, say, Cardano, which has grown about 2,600% this last year, I mean, it's outperformed Ethereum, outperformed Bitcoin, it's outperformed both of them put together. It's sort of just having that in your portfolio, even if it's a small allocation in your portfolio that really has a big impact. I think a lot of people try and they pick these cryptocurrencies that are absolutely nowhere. They're like in the top 200 or the top 500, and, you know, they're meant to change the world in some way, shape, or form.
Right.
I cannot advocate for that. Obviously, I can't provide financial advice, but that seems like a silly strategy to me.
Sure.
You look at Revex and what we do, we actually look at the altcoins that are still pretty big. I mean, we don't look at a single cryptocurrency that's less than about $3.5 billion with a billion dollars worth of value. And what that really means is that there's an active market behind it, and they're generally doing something quite interesting, right? So, I mean, most cryptocurrencies within the top 10 are now sitting over about $4 billion. If you then start venturing out to about the top 20, you're looking at still over $1 billion, over $2 billion actually. And I think you have to look at sort of those bigger projects, because the space is incredibly volatile. I mean, you can see cryptocurrencies move on a daily basis of between, I think on average is about 3.5%, all the way up to 40% some days, right? And that is gut-wrenching stuff, right? It doesn't matter if you come from a professional world of trading or you are an everyday investor, you have to really be into that ride. And looking at sort of the bigger cryptocurrencies, you're not seeing then the 200 or 300% moves in one day, just like you're not seeing maybe the 99% drop in one day. So that's why we sort of advocate for the top 10.
So just tell us quickly, because I noticed Bitcoin, and we always talk about the Bitcoin price because it's kind of the dipstick test for most people of when they might want to get involved or when they might want to know more. It went all over the place this week. It almost dropped a fifth of its value at some point and then climbed right back up.
Yeah, so it went to a record high of about $57,000. This is now not this last week. This was about 2 weeks back.
Mm-hmm.
It then sharply pulled back, and it pulled back all the way through to about $42,000.
Right.
And that's a huge drop, right? That is about a 19.5% drop. And then there was a big kind of swell of investors that moved into the space, pushing it back up about 15%. So now it's sitting at what, about $49,300.
Yeah.
And yesterday it was at $51,000. You still have a very bullish market, right? There's still a lot of people. I mean, I can tell you personally at Revex, there's still a lot of people signing up. It's the first time they're making a crypto purchase. Still billionaires coming in every single day saying that they're allocating a little bit of their money to crypto. It's institutions. We've never received so much institutional interest ever. And we're having to actually look at setting up funds in Luxembourg or in, you know, the UK and whatnot to actually facilitate investments of, you know, $10 million plus, which is really great. I mean, fantastic problem to have. But this is unheard of 2 or 3 years.
just to give people who might be thinking about exactly that the opportunity to start from scratch, how hard is it to join up with Revix? I gave a basic précis. I said you sign up, you just provide proof of your ID, and then you can add some money. It doesn't have to be a lot of money, but it can be. And you then have all these options. So just talk us through it as briefly as possible, like, you know, the elevator pitch of how quick it is and easy it is to get into Revix.
So it is, there's no easier platform really, right? So you just go to www.revix.com, you open an account, that'll take you about 30 to 45 seconds, depending on how fast you type. From there, you would need to verify your account. You would need to send through a proof of address, and yep, you'll need to send through a proof of identification. We're then going to send you a little SMS. You're going to have to take a photo of your ID and take a selfie. We want to see how good looking you are. At the same time, we want to be able to compare your face to your ID document. Just a joke on how good looking you are.
Sia's only going to sign up so you can evaluate how good looking he is. He's that vain.
This is a lot of work, Sean. Now, what filter do I use? What background? Do you want the beach?
Unfortunately, actually, we don't get to see any selfies. This is going through to our verification partners. They're based in the US. So they kind of just say, yes, this person's not a terrorist. And yes, this person's not a criminal. You can accept them as a customer.
Yeah,
doesn't take long.
Explain that quickly.
Selfie is actually the easiest part. Maybe it's here for you, it'll be a little bit more difficult. But, you know, without the selfie backdrop, I think it should be.
Just because people might be nervous about handing over ID information, the reason you have to do that is because you're dealing with money, and there are rules all over the world about where money comes from. Even in the world of cryptocurrency, you can't take dodgy money if you know it's dodgy. And similarly, people can't be sending illicit money in different directions that includes you. Is that more or less correct, or is it also to verify that you're the owner of that Bitcoin once you bought it?
It's actually all three reasons, and the third reason that comes into this, the first two that you've mentioned, and then the third one is that if you get locked out of your account or somebody tries to hack your account, we need to be able to say, hey, listen, somebody's doing this. Like, can we verify that you are the one accessing this account? So that's ID documents, that's potentially sending you a selfie again with a different backdrop. So it's these security measures which sort of, you know, it's a differentiator for us versus other platforms as well. So we need to be able to protect you over the long term. Regulators seem to be failing at doing this. Hopefully in the near future, they'll be able to actually step up. But anyway, that's actually all a really quick process. That takes roughly about a minute to do once you've actually signed up for an account. And from there, we generally take about 3 to 4 hours to verify the account. That's sending off the information to our international partner and whatnot. That's obviously all done on your behalf. And then from there, you make a deposit from your bank. It's really that simple. You make a 500 rand minimum deposit and go up to 2 million if you're really feeling gutsy in this market. And you can invest with us. Then every single month, if you invest in one of our bundles will automatically update. And this is something that's quite interesting. And again, it's a big differentiator versus other platforms out there. Because if you go and you just bet in the likes of Bitcoin, and I say bet deliberately, but if you just buy Bitcoin or Ethereum or Litecoin or just one of these other cryptocurrencies out there, you know, this market is volatile, right? You could have picked like a Ripple. We spoke about that on the show a few weeks ago. It declines 50, 60, 70% in value. And that is really the reason why you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket, right? So for us, diversify across the crypto space. It'll update every single month to include cryptocurrencies that increase in value, remove the cryptocurrencies that decline in value just automatically. And you'll stay invested hopefully over a long period of time. And that's sort of our long-term goal. We're long-term greedy. We want you to be a customer of ours over a 5, 10, 15-year horizon.
Beautiful. All right, Sean, I'm afraid that's all we got time for this morning, but thanks again for the updates. And we will be watching these prices every day with great interest because many of us are now, and we all have a dog in the fight thanks to Revix. And you can find out more by going to revix.com. That's Sean Saunders, the founder of Revix. And we'll check in with him again shortly. Thank you so much.
Cheers, guys. Have a great one.
Cool, Sean. Cheers, man. Awesome. There we go. Very, very good. It is, what is it? It's a Thursday morning, the 4th of March. Unbelievable. Many things to get into in the next hour. It's the Burning Platform, which of course is brought to you by Nando's. We're going to find out what is happening in the world and talk with Pumi and our special guest about some of the things that you need to know about so that if it comes up with friends, family, with work colleagues, if it comes up in some kind of high-level intellectual conversation you find yourself in, God knows where you find those anymore. But if it does, then at least you'll have some.
Since there's no water cooler.
Exactly. And that's where all the important conversations happen. Sia, don't you know this?
Con- conversations at the socially distanced shopping queue happen like, so that's what you can share.
Oh, come on. So many things
to
get to.
Level one, y'all can have dinner parties.
I just want to I want to bring this up. I saw this video, and it's so apt because we were talking to Rich Mulholland yesterday. Ironically, my video wasn't working while we were talking to Rich about how you can better use video conferencing. It was so stupid. My camera just cut out. Anyway, there was a California doctor. I actually saw the clip who was meant to appear before a judge. Right, there was a court in session, and this California doctor joined the Zoom court while he was operating on a patient, and the judge had a complete meltdown. The judge was like, "What are you doing?
How manipulative!
Yeah, you can't do this while you're operating. Rather concentrate on your patient, and we'll reschedule the court date." I don't know what he was being.
That's exactly what he was.
You think he did it on purpose?
He was just appearing in court for some traffic hearing, so it's not as if he committed murder. Not to condone what he did, but I think the audacity to do this. His name is Scott Green, Dr. Scott Green, and he appeared over Zoom while appearing to be mid-operation. The judge called him out and he said, "Oh no, actually this is really fine. It's a simple surgery and I also have another surgeon right here who's doing the surgery with me." But imagine if you are the person who's being operated on or then
guts on the table.
Or then the family who's outside, you're there, you're panicked, you're just waiting, crossing fingers that the surgery goes well, and then you find out that the surgeon was busy on Zoom. Come on.
Just goes to show how seriously they take your health, these people.
I don't care how simple it could be, even if it is my dentist just, I don't know, brushing my teeth themselves. I want you fully focused.
Yeah, you want them to be attentive. No, I agree with that. But it was
on Zoom.
It was funny to watch because the doctor was like, "Yeah, so what? Let's carry on. It's no problem. Let's get on with it.
It's just another day in his life."
Correct. So that was happening. I saw Elon Musk's mother, May, who we discussed on the show the other day. She posted a letter. This is very cute, from the University of Pretoria years ago. Let me read it to you. This is actually really cool. So Elon Musk's mother put this up on social media. It's from the University of Pretoria on the 17th of May, 1989, Sia. And it says, "To whom it may concern, Elon Musk, computer aptitude tests. I've requested IBM South Africa to conduct aptitude tests on Elon Musk regarding computer programming, etc. The results were outstanding, i.e. operating, A+. Programming, A+. Faithfully yours, JLM Vickers, Director, Information Management at the University of Pretoria." So Elon's mom put that up and said, hashtag proud mom. I suppose this proves that you were always going to do well. That's really cute, that's don't sweet. You think?
Yeah.
Very cute.
Yeah, the foundation was already there then at that stage.
Yeah.
And I hope she gets more than breakfast for Mother's Day.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure she has.
She's okay. And listen, she's not exactly a slouch in her own right. I mean, she's not just sitting there hoping her children will give her money. She's done very, very well herself. She's a go-getter. These things.
And then completing the circle of this part one conversation, Mr. George Foreman is alive and well.
Oh, thank God. Okay.
He is 72 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And wow. Very active on the Twitter.
Is he?
He's tweeting it up.
What does he talk about?
Why am I not following George Foreman on Twitter?
You let me correct that. It.
Why?
Let me correct that right this minute.
What are you going to follow? Okay, sure, you don't.
Tell me what.
Listen here. And the old people out here keep delivering content, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Keep delivering content, whether it's Dolly Parton tweeting a picture of herself getting vaccinated with a caption that says, "Dolly getting a bit of her own medicine."
Oh, Oh, you know, the picture is one thing. I saw a clip of her singing. So she read Jolene and she said, vaccine. Oh, no. I thought, yes, darling.
No, that's ridiculous.
Dionne Warwick. I mean, the old people are out here delivering content. My other favorite is O.J. Simpson. When he starts every little video on Twitter with, hey, Twitter world.
Yeah, what I hate about that, I spoke about it briefly last week, is like these three complete assholes, O.J. Simpson, Ghislaine Maxwell, and Gary Glitter, all three of them disgraceful human beings, all three have been vaccinated. So don't worry, everybody. Coronavirus might take you out. It might take out members of your family who are advanced in age or have diabetes or whatever. But those three will be fine. The government has decided to vaccinate them in the U.S. How nice.
Hey, Twitter world.
Hey, Twitter world. This is OJ. This is the juice. Yeah. Where's he? He's got a mask. He's got a mask on that says the juice, as if he needs more attention.
Son of a bitch.
All right, we'll be back with a burning platform.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll be back with a burning platform next. CliffCentral.com.